Welcome back to the Famous Monsters Podcast, your home to all things horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and those days when you actually had to get up and change the channel. I'm your host, George the Jack of All Trades, and with me is Jason the Falcon.
One day I'll have a Falcon call. Today is not that day.
I look forward to that.
Me too, actually. And that other wonderful voice you just heard is our editor-in-chief, Holly Interlandely.
Yo, I almost mangled my name there.
I know, I had like some stuff in my throat.
It's a long name.
Yeah. Damn Italians.
Hey, dude. Hey,
you know I got respect. My last name is Marrero, which is an Italian last name also.
Yeah, I think we all have pretty wacky last names, to be honest. So
yeah, my last name is kind of a mouthful. It's kind of a weird mouthful.
So before we get into anything, there is something that has popped up recently in the news for the past probably few days. And you are the two people who I've been dying to talk to about this.
Ooh.
And that is the reveal of the new bat costume.
Okay. Yeah, let's start there.
Wait, was there more of a reveal than the one I already saw?
It was just like that very slow, like
the 50-second clip, right?
Yeah. It was like all in a red filter and everything. It felt like it was a Daredevil intro as opposed to a Batman tease.
Okay. Yeah, it was very red.
Yeah.
Very red.
So
I think Pattinson is going to do a great job. I'm really excited for his Batman. I heard theories about the costume, though.
Likewise, I'm wondering if they tie
they're going to do like the longer ears from like the Golden Age, maybe.
Oh, I hope so. I love the long ears. They're so stupid looking. It's excellent.
Oh yeah, I don't remember why I heard that rumor, but that's what I heard. It's hard to, I don't know. The clip is so short and so like smoky and red. It's kind of difficult to tell really what it looks like. But, you know, I have confidence. I think Pattinson is going to kill it. So,
yeah, I'm looking for new cast member that they release. I'm like, oh my god, I can't wait to see what is going to happen with this, because it's either going to be awesome or it's going to be an awesome train wreck, and either way I'm still just as excited to see it. But I heard a different theory about the costume specifically to do with the bat on the chest, and I wonder if this is the theory that you heard, that it's made of the gun.
Yes.
Joe Chill's gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not hear
and
that
looking theory. Looking at it closer after I heard that, I was like, oh, I could kind of see it. But one thing I noticed about the bat is there's no head.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the shapes and there's no head.
Which totally really leans into that theory of it being the gun pieces.
Right.
Which immediately made me think of that. Sorry to cut you off, but like, remember Batman 1000, and it had those short stories, and there was that short story where he takes the gun and you find out it's a metal plate behind the bat.
It
immediately made me think of that.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, they're going with this idea. I love that idea. It's a great idea. If it's not the gun, it looks like it's pieces that come out. Which would be interesting if it was like some kind of a weird batarang dispenser, almost like a Pez dispenser, where
oh my god,
you just can keep taking them out, because like you don't want to have just Pez. Two because it's useless.
I'm imagining him puffing his chest and his the batarang just come out.
It would be even better if actual Pez came out.
He should have a built-in Pez dispenser. He's always got some kind of a kid with him.
Right?
Just dispense.
That would be excellent.
Bulls and everything.
Is that so that was the same theory that you heard?
That was, George? Yes. That was one of the big theories that I saw behind the costume. On a personal level, Now, anyone who, like, you guys probably already know how I feel about this. I'm not excited about this film whatsoever.
I know.
And I have nothing against Robert Pattinson. I think he's actually a very good actor. Mm-hmm. But not every good actor deserves every role or should be in every role. Because I think Val Kilmer and George Clooney are also very good actors. They weren't good Batman.
Well, but that was also sort of due to the rest of the film. I mean,
yeah,
the rest of the movie's being totally goofy.
Well, there you
were
go.
Were they allowed to be good Batman? Because I don't think that, like...
But people always use that excuse of like, oh, well, this or that. Like, people thought Heath Ledger was going to be bad as the Joker. And it's like, yeah, but there's been good actors who have done bad jobs. So it's not like a good actor is going to save this. There is a huge possibility this could be bad. Mm-hmm. I also don't think he's Batman. He doesn't look like Batman. I don't see him being Batman. He's not my Batman.
I don't think Christian Bale looks like Batman, but you know, yeah. He did all right.
I liked him as Batman. I even didn't mind his voice. His voice didn't even bother me. I'm not a Christian Bale hater when it comes to Batman. I thought he was great.
Oh, I love Christian Bale. He's not what I think of as Batman. So
I wasn't he did a good job with the role, but I don't look at Christian Bale and see Batman.
But so that being said, when I saw this costume, I had very mixed feelings because a lot of it was all we really see is the chest area and the head. And at first, the first I thought was the Arkham Asylum games. Because it kind of had that very mechanical, techie look to it. And I love those games. Like, that's probably some of the best Batman games and stories that we've seen in the past 10 to 15 years. So with that, I was like, oh, I kind of like that. That's kind of cool. But then I see the camera come up and I see he has a collar. And I was like, why does this Batman have a collar?
And I know. I was surprised to see it.
Yeah.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me
I said nothing. I just said something inappropriate. I said bondage Batman.
It reminded me just a little bit, not so much in the shape, but just like the fact that there is a collar there of New 52 Superman costume.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had the kind of that like mock little turtleneck collar. And I actually really liked that costume. But it does seem to be an interesting kind of choice for a Batman, especially like this is meant to be like kind of early Batman, right? Like around year one ish.
Yeah, I think that's why I heard the theory about the longer ears. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I just don't agree with basically deciding if a movie is going to be good or not before even seeing any of it. I guess I don't know. I guess I try to keep an open mind, and I know Batman's been done to death, but he's Batman, so
you know. I think what's making me excited about this movie, especially when it comes to like the casting, is there's so many different characters coming up that it feels like it's gonna be, even if one person isn't doing so good of a job, it seems like they're really kind of trying to set the stage of look at all these different people that like make up Gotham, almost kind of the way that like Birds of Prey had a bunch of different people. You know what I mean? Like that's what's making me super excited about it.
Did either of you see Birds of Prey?
Yeah, we both did.
I wanted to. I haven't been to the theater since December. I'm a horrible person.
It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I hear good things.
Yeah, like for me, I gotta say, the thing that you're excited about is the thing I'm worried about, because only one franchise has pulled off having a ton of characters, and that's obviously Marvel. Mm-hmm. And it still took them 10 years to pull that off. No one has successfully pulled off in one shot having a bunch of characters in one thing and still give them each enough time to breathe and for you to understand who they are and their motives. Because that's the downfall of Birds of Prey, is that you didn't really get to enjoy and get in depth with each character because it was really focused on that one person. And that's how Batman's going to be. You're going to focus on Batman. You're not going to really get to delve into the mind of each villain that he has to deal with, possibly. At least that's the thing that could happen. So that's my fear with it. It's like, I don't want to have a Spider-Man 3 happen to Batman Part 1.
That's like worst case scenario. Come on.
But you know, it's true though. That's the thing. Anytime you start adding more than one villain, it's usually a formula for failure.
But they have done it with Batman before.
In a film?
A
live action film.
The Dark Knight. Yeah. The Dark Knight had obviously the Joker, and then there was a very in-depth Two-Face story. And then there was
still Scarecrow.
Little bits of the Scarecrow was in it briefly. Yeah. And then there were also little bits of the mob in that one. And I know that some of the characters are I forget his name.
I think the Falconis were in there.
The Falcone family?
The Falconis, yeah, I think they were in there. The mob felt throwaway, though. Like, everyone else felt throwaway. Like, yes, to your point, they were there, but the Scarecrow was an afterthought, so was the mob, and Two-Face was there, and it was a great way to create Two-Face, but then they killed him.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if he was thrown away at the end, too. Like, it was really the Joker show. I think that's where it probably worked to their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to have every character... That's someone has to take front and center stage, and everyone else has to just fall behind.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I'm trying to think of a film where
mind it for a Batman thing
works. But I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of a film where having an actual rogues gallery for the film works. And not just a Batman film, but any film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the Joker's not in it, so I'm already it gets points for me. The Joker's not in it, so that's my main focus.
I love your detest for the Joker.
I am so tired of him. It's everywhere. The thing is everywhere. Like, I'm just, can we move on from it, please? Like, I think of like two Joker stories in the past few years that have been interesting enough for me to care about. And one of them was White Knight, and I can't think of what the other one is now. I'm just bored of it. Like, he's gotta be in every game, even though he's dead. And it's like, can we just move on from Joker, please? Like,
I'm so bored of comic books.
I know. And they're just about to start another whole thing with it. And it's, I'm tired. I'm tired of the Joker.
Okay.
Well, on that note, today, everyone, we have a special episode, and we're opening up a new segment that we will be calling Fresh from the Crypt. This is where the crew and I will go over new or classic horror pieces that we've gotten into recently, whether it's movies, comics, video games, nothing is off limits. And Holly, it's been a while since we've actually heard from you. What have you been digging into lately?
Yeah, well, I had a little trouble coming up with something because I've spent the past month or so like catching up with stuff I hadn't seen. Like, I finally saw Joker, I finally saw Parasite. You know, that's kind of what I do. I play catch up with movies and TV shows all the time. That's just what I always do. But one thing that I don't usually play catch up with is comic books. I mean, I'm right in there at the beginning because comic books are my jam. And I wanted to talk today about a new creator-owned series that only has two issues out so far. The third one comes out next week. But the first two issues are so good that it's already one of my favorite comic books of the year. It's from IDW Publishing. They're one of the larger quote unquote indie comic book publishers. They have a bunch of licenses, but they also do creator owned stuff. This book is written and drawn by one of the artists for Transformers, which is one of IDW's licenses. His name is Livio Ramondelli. And his art is unreal, but that's not even what makes this book so good. The book is called The Kill Lock. It's a science fiction story how to explain this? The main characters are all robots. There are no humans to be found. And our main four robots, we have the little kid robot, we have the artisan, the labor class, and then the Wraith robot. These four robots have been sentenced to a kind of punishment that is called a kill lock, which essentially means that if one of them dies, all of them die. And that's a cool conceit in the first place, but it's not what kept me reading. These four robots have incredibly vivid personalities. Like, the artisan guy, for example, is a total dick. Like, within the first five pages of the first issue, he's going into a bar on some, you know, some faraway planet and, you know, meeting a labor class robot at the bar and insulting him and basically like taking away his ability to speak and taking in, making him blind and doing all this horrible stuff just because he wants to and because he can. and it's, you're just like, oh my God, this poor labor robot. Like, it's just, it's really, really funny. And there's the labor robot that's in the kill lock is he's a drug addict and an alcoholic. And then the Wraith is this massive, like, mysterious, really deadly thing with a face that's just, you know, glowing orange bars across it. This book, I just can't say enough of how great it is. I think I actually took a picture of a couple of the panels. They're on this sort of dirty, trashy, like, heist planet, like casino planet thing. And the artisan robot and the Wraith are, you know, discussing how horrible this place is, and the kid robot went off unsupervised, of course, and you know, and and the Wraith has been telling stories of his great history of, you know, killing whole planets and destroying all the bad people. And this is just like the bottom half of like one page. The artisan guy goes, "When your legion was burning worlds full of fucked up people, how'd you miss this one?"
Oh my God.
Then the kid comes back and says, he's drinking, meaning the labor robot. And he says, "Also, some guy took one of my arms, but it's okay because he said he'd bring it right back." He's like standing there with only one arm. And it's like, dude, I can't. It's so easy to make robots boring. These robots are more vivid, have more vivid personalities than most human characters in comic books that I've encountered.
And that then sounds really cool.
Then there's the fact that the art is absolutely gorgeous. Ramondelli, who's done Transformers work, you can tell he's done Transformers work because, you know, like the Wraith robot looks kind of like a Decepticon. But it's just beautiful science fiction work. And it's also really clever and really funny and really messed up. Like, it had me feeling really horrible within the first five pages emotionally, which,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Unheard of. I was like, wow. So I can't recommend this book highly enough. It's from IDW. It's called The Kill Lock by Livio Ramondelli. And I'm assuming that producers are just throwing money at this guy because, wow, would this make a great movie?
I could see this fitting into that world of like Death, Love, and Robots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, it totally makes sense, like, for someone to want to do something with this, considering how successful that show was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting a season two, so.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's cool.
So I imagine that this group, like, they need to work together to survive.
Right. Yeah, they're actually they're seeking the person who first invented the kill lock so they can possibly get it reversed somehow.
Okay.
that's how they end up on the heist planet. And, you know, they get into all sorts of hijinks and bad things happen. And then they leave again and they try to find it again. It's right now we're on a journey trying to find this person. But it does not bode well for them. So I can't wait to see what happens next. I really can't.
I'm kind of curious towards what they did to get this sentence, like especially since one is a kid robot.
Yeah. They sort of hint at that throughout the series. Most of what they say about the kid robot is that, oh, you know, he doesn't deserve to be here. You know, he's just in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever. And but they haven't actually like stated exactly what he's done, which I think is cool. I mean the laboring robot was kicked out for being drunk on the job and essentially forgetting to close a flight deck closing a flight deck too early when a ship was coming in, and the ship crashed and hundreds of people died. So he was drunk on the job and he got sentenced to the kill lock. Yes, for the others, it's all still nebulous. But
what do robots get drunk on?
That was my next question.
Because at first, I was like, are they just like very advanced androids? But then you said the one looks like a Decepticon, so they're androids. But
the bar scene. Let's see if there's anything.
Some kind of like petrol or.
Yeah.
Ethyl alcohol.
Can you ferment gas? Like it, because the most alcohol is fermented, yeah. Right? So is it, am I thinking too hard about this?
Every time we said it gets drunk, it's like, what are they drinking? That's all I can think. What kind of order is this?
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't really say anything. It doesn't say what he's drinking. Huh. It's just it's funny. When I first tasted this, I hated it. It doesn't say what it is. Don't ever try this. Don't even have a sip of this again. Like, you know, they don't actually say what it is.
It's
petroleum. There's no particular. It's some. Super alien vermouth gas thing. I don't even know.
or it's just regular petroleum mixed with vodka.
Yeah, right.
Oh, hey, yeah, yeah.
It's literally just alcohol mixed in with the regular stuff that the robots are having.
And that's how you make human alcohol, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine that they, like, for the kid, he's like, I'll just have a Chevy Temple, please.
Oh my god, that's really funny.
That's good. That's really good. Yeah. Well, I mean, the dialogue again, it's incredibly clever and very funny. And you hate the artisan designer robot, but he's such an asshole that you sort of are charmed by him.
So sometimes you have to have those characters.
Yeah.
Those characters can be really fun.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, go buy it if you haven't. Third issue comes out next week.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think I'm sold. I'm going to check this out.
Yeah. Definitely. Me too.
So, Jason, I know, like myself, you get stuck in some YouTube rabbit holes.
I really do. Actually, right before we started recording, we were watching... You could kind of qualify this as a horror thing because she put chicken nuggets and Coke and a Big Mac and barbecue sauce and some rice in a rice cooker and is now going to eat it.
Oh, gross.
Which is absolutely horrifying.
Ew.
Yeah, I get stuck in weird food YouTube sometimes. But I also definitely get stuck in horror YouTube. Which I have been watching a lot of lately because it just is, there's something very satisfying about watching a bunch of videos about creepy stuff on the internet. And there is actually a lot of people that kind of go over this stuff. There's Some of the people I've been watching recently, like, to kind of give an idea of what these people cover, like, sometimes it's true crime stuff, or like disappearances and stuff, or like mysterious deaths, where that's not really so much of like horror, it's just creepy. But a lot of them cover sort of the, I guess you could call it the phenomenon of alternate reality games or ARGs, which for the most part are pretty obscure, but they have a tendency of crossing over into like a marketing thing. Like, actually, Holly, you know this because Hills did one recently with Eroda.
The Eroda campaign. And he fooled everyone into Eroda thinking campaign. It was some awesome, like, you know, immersive game. And then it turned out to be a Harry Styles music video. And people were so angry. They were like, ah!
I know, because usually the people who are getting in on ARGs, they don't have a lot of crossover with boy band fans.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
You are like the exception. There also have been like ARG marketing campaigns in the past for like Cloverfield. Had one. The Dark Knight actually had one. So it's sometimes they're not very successful, sometimes they are. But there's a lot of them that are not trying to promote anything that we know of and are just like on the internet, like basically these really involved games that people play, and it gets really hard to keep track of or know what is happening with what, especially because a lot of the forums that used to investigate this stuff have kind of like disappeared over the years. But there's a lot of YouTubers like Nexpo or Nightmind or Rainbot Atrocity Guide, like, are some of the ones I've been watching recently that have been going into some really creepy stuff, which is a lot of fun.
And these are forums that talk about ARGs around the internet, or is it usually a particular one?
No, these are YouTubers that I'm talking about, that just talk about different ARGs or different like creepy videos. Cause sometimes there's no game element to a thing, and it's just a bunch of like weird, like unsettling videos. Which I'm sure,
like a creepypasta or something, or like a, not like a story.
Right. Yeah, no, but basically like that, of like someone is just like using the internet as the way of telling their story, like acting something out on social media or through YouTube and just uploading videos. Kind of like I mentioned Marble Hornets, I think, not on the Best of the Decade podcast, but in the article that we wrote.
Yeah, you did.
And I mean, stuff like that, it's like it's interactive, but there's not really a game element to it because it was going to happen whether people solved the riddle or not. You know what I mean?
It's almost like creating a mythology, like.
Right.
Just exactly. You know, for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Stuff like Smile Dog.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. So it's stuff like that, or like people making videos about the rake or something like that. So that's what, like, I've been watching a lot of that recently. And I've also been watching a bunch of YouTubers that kind of do like film analysis and reviews a little bit more so than like the typical, like, this movie came out and this is what I thought of it. But people really kind of breaking down like and analyzing the stuff, like a ton of that recently.
I was just gonna say, I'm sure you guys have seen the YouTube theory video about how Snowpiercer is a continuation of Willy Wonka.
I have seen something of that.
Yeah,
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Oh yeah, no, it's
what?
It's really actually. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, and it sort of is, but I recommend watching it. He makes a pretty convincing argument, even though it's ridiculous.
You're gonna have to link. I love that stuff too, like the weird, like off the wall conspiracy theories and stuff.
Yeah,
That I have not heard of that, but that sounds really
it's very funny. What?
I'll have fun watching that get pieced together.
And speaking of YouTube, I finally sat down and watched a YouTube walkthrough of PT from 2014.
Oh, wow.
Man. Although the walkthrough was disappointing because whoever was recording it went too fast, you know, because he was clearly trying to get through it just to show you exactly what happened, which is fine. But plowing through the hallways like that, just, it doesn't have the same effect as when you're sort of like walking carefully and like looking around and finding aborted babies in the sink. And, you know, that was my favorite part, by the way, the aborted baby in the sink.
Because I mean, so much of what made PT distinct was you literally had to figure it out as you went. Like there weren't really instructions. So watching someone that clearly knows what they're doing and is just trying to get through it, like that's not.
Yeah, it wasn't nearly as exciting as I wanted it to be. I mean, it was cool to see like how the puzzle played out, but I would much rather watch a more drawn out, careful kind of very creepy run through of it.
I'm glad you brought up PT because that reminds me of a game I was reading about today that is like it's a computer game and it's kind of just like a point and click game from what I understand, but it's all black and white and
that's about Junji Ito or inspired by Junji Ito. I saw the same one.
Yeah, the art is very Ito-esque. Yeah, I don't remember the name of the game.
Worlds of Horror or Worlds something of like
Horror.
That?
Yeah,
it's, I totally like that. Saw the same article. Yeah.
Yeah. On Bloody Disgusting.
It wasn't Bloody. It was some other site, but.
Oh, okay.
I remember seeing Junji Ito in video game in the headline and being like, oh shit.
Attention caught.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to get this game and play it because that, just the pictures that I saw looked super, super unsettling and really fun.
And it looked awesome. It was very pixelated, very old school, but that's part of what made it really cool to look at. Like, it felt like I was playing, it felt like you'd be playing like Where in Europe is Carmen Sandiego, except, you know, with creepy Junji Ito monsters.
Or screwed up stuff.
It had a very like, almost sort of like 8-bit, like, but black and white kind of feel to it. Super cool. I'm definitely going to be looking into that.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Junji Ito, I read Gyo recently.
Oh my God. Gyo is the greatest thing ever.
George, have you read it?
I've been through it because of the shop, but it's been a long time since I've read those books.
Yeah. It's
funny you guys both brought it up because recently a person that Jen follows on Twitter was doing this big giveaway of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Switch and some books. And I saw two books on her bed. And one of them was the Spyro one.
Uzumaki.
Yeah. Uzumaki. And I was like, she's just giving that away. I got super excited. For some reason, I don't have those books in my collection. And I was like, yo, if I can win that, I was like, who's that person? Following now, hashtagging everything I need to do to get this. Uh-huh. It's like, I can give a crap about the Switch. Like, if I win the Switch, like, you can have it. Can I have the books, please?
Oh my God.
I think I have all of his books, including the short story ones. I'm a little bit obsessed, but Gyo suffered from a really unfortunate anime adaptation that doesn't really do it justice at all.
I feel like there has been no good adaptations, which makes me very curious about, well, I've heard there's some different like mixed results on some of the Tomy adaptations, but it makes me very curious about how that Adult Swim Uzumaki is going to turn out. Like, I feel like just going to be one of those, like the motion picture, like the animated manga. Right. Yeah. But I'm curious about it.
The live action Uzumaki film is actually really, really good. I like it a lot.
Oh, really?
I watched the first live action Tomie and I wasn't very impressed with it. It was, I don't know. It didn't, maybe because the original Tomie, like, it's such an epic and it goes for so long. And yeah. This movie just tried to consolidate it too much and it didn't really work. But, yeah.
What, if you had to pick a favorite, what's your favorite?
My favorite, Junji Ito?
Mm-hmm. Both of you.
I'm almost gonna go with Gil. I do love a bunch of his short stories, like some of the ones in the collection was called Shiver that Viz released. But there's a short story where people start to see their own heads as balloons around the town. And they keep getting whisked away by their balloons, and they try to, you know, pop the balloons and bring them down. But if you pop the balloon, the person dies too. And it's just, it's totally bonkers. I love that one. But yeah, I think Gio might be my favorite.
Gio is really good.
I'm definitely overdue to read them again, but I think on a visual standpoint, like Uzumaki's like the spiral thing was just so freaking unsettling. And I don't have one of those phobias of like, I don't remember what the phobia is called, but like when you are afraid of like the holes, like the many holes.
Oh, it's like
trypophobia.
Yes. It made me think of that. And it's just like, I don't, that doesn't bother me, but something about this makes me feel that. And like, I can get the sense now of why someone would be irked or by something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's very rare to find a book or art that makes me, that gets under my skin.
Yeah.
Because I'm never like bothered by anything like that. Unless it's something with eyes, then I get creeped out. But otherwise, like, I'm good.
I have to say that my favorite is the one about his two cats.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that, I think that one's adorable for some reason.
It's so cute. There's something so hilarious about seeing the same creepy art style, but about these two, like, what are the cats, like Yan and Moo or something like that?
Yeah,
it's Yan and Moo. That, oh my God.
And there's that sequence where he like mistakes one of them for a slug or something. Because it's like late at night. He's like, is that a slug? And it's it's crazy stuff. It's really good.
If you want to talk about like someone who is does such a good job about walking the fine line between horror and comedy, Junji Ito is definitely, he's nailing it.
Who wants to see Bong Joon-ho adapt a Junji Ito story? Raise your hand.
Oh my God.
That's exactly what I was thinking of when Jason was talking about you hadn't seen a good adaptation. I was like, man, I bet he'd do a dope adaptation of that guy's
stuff. Honestly, which one though?
Oh gosh.
I'd do a whole series.
I do like that idea. Take a bunch of the short stories.
I mean, I'd watch the hell out of Bong Joon-ho's Gyo. Like I would just, that would be like the greatest thing of all time.
That would be a really good one. That would be a really, really good one. Because he's already, like, The Host was a great monster movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he does the horror comedy tragedy thing really, really well. How about you, George?
I've been binging quite a bit lately, as I often do. I'm definitely a Netflix connoisseur of sorts, and thankfully recently we had two horror shows from comic books, which is very relative to what you were talking about earlier, and that is October Faction and Lock and Key.
Woohoo!
Yeah, October Faction comic books are known, like, written by Steve Niles, and art was Damian Worm, and then Lock and Key was Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. And so I was pretty excited that these, first of all, I didn't even know October Faction was coming out when it did. I was just like flipping through my Netflix, and then bam, it popped up. It's like, you might want to watch this. And I was like, no one told me about this. When did this happen?
I only knew because Steve Niles posted on his Facebook. He was like, October Faction on Netflix. And I was like, oh my God.
But there was like no promotion for it otherwise, right? Like there was no hubbub or talk about it at all. Like I knew about Lock and Key at least for months. But
yeah,
October Faction was a pure surprise. It just came out of nowhere. And both are enjoyable. Both were really fun to watch, I believe. I do feel like if you're into the comic books, then as always, there's going to be things that are lost and that you're going to miss. You're going to feel a totally different tone. Mm-hmm. And I definitely felt it with Lock and Key so much, because I was talking to you, Jason, at work about it. And mm-hmm. I own the books of Lock and Key. I actually have not read Lock and Key yet. Despite the fact that when I worked at a comic book shop for many years, I sold the crap out of that book. Like, I was able to pitch that book so well to people.
And yet you never read it.
I never read it.
Well, it's so interesting.
I know the premise, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting because Lock and Key came out before Joe Hill was like, really Joe Hill, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like this is way before he had established himself as a novelist or even anything.
But so you've read the books though, correct, Holly?
It's been a long time. I don't think I actually finished the series because I'm a horrible person.
It's long. It's long. I want to say it has close to 10 trades. So
there are five. There wow. are five. There are five trades, and then there's an like a sort of Omega and a one shot. So I'd say there
yeah yeah a lot of side trades. Stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Okay, so maybe we'll try to refresh your memory, because like as I was watching like probably 3-4 episodes in, I was like, all right, I'm curious, how much does this tie in with the book right now? So I'm sitting in front of my TV, like 3 feet away from the screen, like classic 1980s child style, and mm-hmm. I'm looking through the pages. I was like, all right, so this is this scene, okay, and I'm immediately seeing a huge difference because the aesthetic style of the show is very modern. And relative to like the look of like a CW show. And I mean that not so much in the sense of how it's filmed, but in the sense of just what they're wearing and like how the kids look. They look like your typical regular teenage kids, you know? While if you read the book, it's like, it kind of has a white trashy feel to it, especially for like the antagonist boy who's coming after them. In the show, like he just looks like, all right, he's just a kid who's probably touched and kind of mental. But in the book, like he looks like he's straight up like from the sticks, you know, and his dad's probably named Billy Bob or whatever.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah. Creepy rednecks.
And even like the daughter in the book, like she has all these piercings and stuff. And like they really try to push her like she's gothy and edgy and stuff. While in the show, it's really just like she's a loner. And that's it. Like nothing visual about her says that she's edgy at all. And I'm okay with those things, but it's like, it was such a huge drastic difference that now I'm just like, okay, now I have to read the book. What have I been doing all these years? Cause I'm now super curious. Like I start getting to that mindset of how I feel with when I watch my comic book movies. I'm generally very knowledgeable with whatever thing I'm going into ahead of time. So this is one of those rare occasions where it's like, I actually didn't know what I was going to get beforehand. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting being on the newbie side of things as opposed to like always understanding the whole world that I'm diving into. But I will say I loved the keys themselves. So like for anyone who doesn't know, in Lock and Key, you have this family, which is the Lock family. Their dad gets killed by this teenager. I'm describing the show, not the book right now, of course. And so they're all kind of traumatized by this. They're trying to get a new start. They move from Washington and they go over to Massachusetts, I believe. And they go to move into his house, like a family house, which is the key house, hence Lock and Key. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of keys that are actually hidden in the house. They don't know this, but the youngest son, he starts hearing some whispers and such. And he finds the keys. In turn, he ends up not just unlocking, pun intended, the mysteries of the house, but also finding out that there is a villain of sorts that he doesn't know is a villain, but that is going to try to take these keys. And the whole adventure is really these kids against this person who we end up finding out is actually a shadow of one of the friends of the dad from like when they were teenagers.
Oh.
Spoiler alert.
Oh yeah, yeah. Spoiler. I feel like there's a book. It's like if you didn't read the book, it's not my fault.
Spoilers. I was mostly joking. I just you know I don't care about spoilers.
Yeah. But to all you listeners, I'm trying not to give away too much because I think it is worth watching. I really enjoyed mm-hmm. how the keys look like the keys from the book. The keys are something very, very vivid. I remember distinctively because every trade paperback had one of the keys on it. And so they did a really good job of recreating those, and seeing what each of them can do is really cool too. So like you have a key that's the anywhere key. And if you think of a place, you can put it into any door and it'll take you to anywhere, but you have to have seen the place. So like, you can't just be like, oh, I want to go to the Eiffel Tower. If you've never seen the Eiffel Tower, it's not going to bring you there, you know? But if you want to go to that ice cream shop down the street, you think of it, boom, you're there. And I really thought that was like a cool thing because like the kid, that's the first key he finds. And he shows it to like, first he actually uses it. And he goes and does that exactly what I said. He goes and gets ice cream from like an ice cream shop down the downtown. and he comes back and he's in his sister's room because he got this key from like her bracelet that the dad gave her. So he kind of broke her bracelet. She's pissed off because he broke something and he's in her room and she doesn't notice that he has a cone of ice cream that came out of nowhere.
Oh my God.
And he's like, I got this key. And it's like, it could take us anywhere. And she's like, stop making up stuff, you and your imagination. He's like, I'll show you. Where do you want to go? And she says, I want to go to the Eiffel Tower. And so he puts the key in and it's just her closet. Nothing's there. And he's like, what the hell? It didn't work. So she thinks he's being a stupid little kid.
Yeah.
And he goes to this little well that's near their, that's in like their home's property. And he starts talking to the voice that told him how to use the key. And now he actually sees her. The whole time he thinks this is his echo, which is really cute. This is actually just the bad person the whole time. And she's like, and she's like, oh, well, you have to have seen the place to go there. He starts explaining to him. He's like, oh, okay. And that comes into play later on because when she gets the key from him, you see like she can't just go anywhere. Like there's a moment where I think she looks like at a poster of a destination. And because she saw the poster, now she knows where she wants to go and she uses it to escape. I was like, oh, it's really cool. It's like, she's like, she doesn't know the world 100% because like I said, she's just a shadow of a person. So she doesn't have those memories. So I thought that was really interesting that she would like look at somewhere. It's like, all right, now I know I can go somewhere to get to this next place to continue my mission.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah. And that's like a little thing where it's like, oh, okay, they could have easily just got away with it where they just opened the door and went anywhere she wanted. But to really play on that fact of like, all right, she doesn't know where she's going. She's going to need some kind of hint of what to do next to traverse through this world. And I think this little details like that make it worth watching. I will say there are teenagers. There's going to be teenage drama. So for fully developed adults, it can get tedious having to trudge through that stuff. But once the kids are like just in it and they're invested in discovering where the keys are, how to find them, how to use them, super entertaining. Like there's a key that can control a person through like a music box. And it's like whatever you say the person has to do, but they don't know that you're making them do it. There is like another key that's the boy key. That key was probably one of the coolest keys. It opens like a door in your mind. So you put the key in your neck and then it unlocks your head. And then you can go inside your brain and you can experience your memories and just enjoy what your mind is. And for like the kid, it's a playhouse because he's a child. So it's just like a bunch of fun and games and everything. For the sister, it's a huge mall and like all her memories are at a candy shop. And I think for one of they end up going into the mind of like one of the father's friends when he was a kid. And she's like in a institute, so she doesn't talk or anything. And in her head, like it's back in the day, it's like 1980s, early 90s. And all her memories are on VHS tapes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So all of those little things are really cool how they play with all that stuff. And it's a decent effects too, I guess. Like there's moments where a kid will turn to a ghost and the spirit realm of it is interesting how they play with it. Cause it kind of has this watery, there's a movement to it. It's not like you don't stay solid when they're in ghost form. Uh-huh. And it feels like almost kind of like atoms kind of moving around, which I thought was very interesting. Cause you always think of ghosts as a solid thing, But if you are a ghost, maybe you're not so put together. You're more corporeal. So that was that was really cool. I liked it very much. But I did mention there was two shows. There was also October Faction. Now, Holly, I know you're a big, big fan of this book, right?
Yeah, it's fun as hell.
I think the book is probably better than the show on this one. Everything was kind of cool in the idea of things, but it just didn't feel executed as good as it could have been. It definitely tried to focus more on trying to get like messages across of things with like either racism or preference of sex and everything like that, as opposed to like the fact that this is a family that hunts monsters and they have two kids that are warlocks. I would have loved to just dive deeper into that world as opposed to like the social commentary of stuff.
That's interesting, because in the book, the atmosphere is a huge part of the book, but the warlock aspect is way at the forefront, and the other stuff is just sort of, it brings it into the real world, which is nice.
Yeah,
but it's not like beating you over the head with it or anything like that.
Oh, this one was. The show definitely, it focuses more on that as opposed to the warlock thing. It really came to fruition probably the last two episodes.
What? It took that long?
Yeah.
Okay, that's unfortunate.
It really bummed me out because all the creatures looked phenomenal. Like when you got to have monster moments, they were done so well. Most of it was practical effects. And each monster actually had a very original look too. Or like, we're used to seeing vampires and werewolves and such like that. The vampires in this didn't look like your typical vampire. You know, initially, yes, they were human looking, but once they would change, like their teeth came out like a viper. You know, it was very snake-like and they were very elongated. Their mouths would extend. It was really, really cool looking.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they would kind of mix it with CG, and the CG, like, it wasn't necessarily the best ILM Marvel status. But for a TV show, it was really well done and meshed well with the practical effects. I was just always so disappointed that I only got like 5 minutes of a monster scene. And then I was back to like the high school scene with the kids. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, that budget.
Yeah, that's all I can figure. Maybe they didn't have the budget, because that doesn't sound like the book at all.
They went for quality over quantity, maybe.
I guess. But then the quality of the story kind of went down too.
Oh.
Because like I said, we're not delving into like the real problem, which is the fact that, I guess I'm gonna go with some super spoilers here. So the dad comes from a family, a lineage of monster hunters.
Mm.
And if you marry into the family, then you are now a monster hunter too. At least that's what I got from the show. I don't know if the book was exactly like that too.
Yeah, no,
But the wife marries into it, and he doesn't like the business. He doesn't like what his family, he didn't like his family at all. But he's kind of just like does it to do it. It kind of felt like, well, this is what I do. You know, it's the family business, whatever. It was very hum-ho about it. And they try to keep the kids out of it for a while. And for most of the show, you think they're trying to keep them out of it because of the fact that, well, we don't want that for our kids. We want them to have a normal life, unlike what we had. But then you find out, oh no, their kids are warlocks and they hunt warlocks because warlocks are monsters too, for some reason.
Oh.
And you find out even further later on that these kids, like the family that they would have had was a part of a genocide. So all the warlocks got killed off for the most part. And only one was like left alive, in which we never truly find out, now that I think about it, how she was left alive and who put her in like this lake and cinder blocks, because that's how you see her. The first time you see her is like in a lake tied down with chains. And it's like, we never find out how that happens. Maybe the book says it. I don't know. Hmm. But through the whole, finally at the end, the last two episodes, the kids find out that they're warlocks, their whole history, and that their parents have been lying to them all these years. And they meet their true mother. And then they're just like, all right, we're warlocks now. We're going to go with our real mom and just do whatever we want. Screw you guys. And it's so out of nowhere And I was like, wow, like there was no buildup for this at all. Like, I would have loved them if
how many episodes is it?
I want to say 8, maybe.
Because the comic book series is over 30 issues. And then there are several follow-up miniseries as well.
It's Netflix, so I want to say it's probably like 8, maybe 10.
I don't know. I'll have to, maybe I'll watch it.
Please do, because you definitely probably have more knowledge behind it than I do. I never finished that book.
Well, with Steve's stuff, I always feel like atmosphere is like a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And if you lose that, it just sort of, you know, it loses its oomph in a lot of ways. So yeah. If it's not stylized, like if the filming itself isn't stylized, like the way maybe Sin City was stylized or, you know, something like that, then I can see why it would land flatter.
Yeah, it's 10 episodes. It's 10 episodes and each episode is 45 minutes.
Sounds so it's like plenty of time.
Yeah, it's plenty of time to tell a good story. And like the big thing for me, like I feel like every Steve Niles book I've ever gotten into, it's always dark.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, visually and the story itself, obviously. And I always feel like he's not one of those writers. Like, he's not an Alan Moore. He's not going to talk your head off, which granted, I'm not crapping on Alan Moore. I love his books. But he's a he's a very wordy writer. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I feel like Niles really leans on his artist to do some heavy lifting. And this didn't feel like they were going that route. Like they didn't want to lean on visuals at all. They just want, they were trying to just do it through all the conversations, and the conversations didn't lead to anywhere important.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Cause when shit went down, it was cool. It was awesome seeing them confront other monsters. It was awesome when the kids are learning that they have powers and just trying to figure that stuff out. I also really like the storyline when they meet, they find out that the monsters are uniting. So werewolves and vampires and others are starting to come together, and because they're realizing we have a common enemy. It's the humans. They're trying to kill us. Mm-hmm. So they create their own army and their own military, and they're trying to hunt down the witch or the warlock also. And so in turn, the parents end up teaming up with one of those soldiers. And just having them like realize like, holy shit, we've been doing the wrong thing all these years. Like they come to find out that the organization they work for is actually not so good. Like they're not just killing these beasts, quote unquote, but they're torturing them. They're doing tests on them. It's like at the end of the day, the humans are the actual monsters in this show. And I'm always a fan of that kind of idea mentality. That twist. Mm-hmm. I just wish they played into it more. Like I think that was the high point of the show and it kind of just got put on the shelf. But you watch it and you let us know what you think.
I will. I think I will. I really enjoy the comic book series, so it'll at the very least it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they do with it.
Yeah, who knows? Like you might be able to find little like connections that made sense. Jason, you're
speaking of that. Yeah, speaking of Netflix and Monster Hunters and monsters, Castlevania comes back in like 2 weeks.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, it does.
Oh, I'm so excited. I haven't watched the trailer yet because I'm like, I'm just going to go into it. You know what I mean? I just want to go into it. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, I haven't watched anything for it either. I think I just can't wait just to dive in myself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know that we have talked about Castlevania briefly on this podcast before, but I think it was a long time ago and only the first season was out, which was like the 3 episodes. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And we all haven't watched it yet, too.
Right. It was just Chase and I.
Yeah.
And we both had that moment of like, where's the rest of it? But oh my goodness, the second season was super good. It's making me super excited for the first because I want to see like these side characters. Like I can't wait to see what and I love the main three as well, but yeah. I can't wait to see what happens with all of these different people.
Yeah, for sure. It's a show that's worth watching for even if you're not into, if you don't know what Castlevania is, you're not into the video game lore and everything mm-hmm. from it. It stands alone on its so. I can't even find words to praise this. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's high fantasy and monsters. Like it done really well. You know what I mean? It's just really good. The animation is so good. And I'll say it again. It makes me upset about the most recent attempt at a Berserk anime because it was the arc I really wanted to see. And they decided to animate it the way they animated it. And I wish that they had done it the way that Netflix did Castlevania, because it looks amazing.
The animation in Castlevania is definitely a highlight. It's mm-hmm. just because, you know, as you mentioned, some animes are, you know, cheaply produced. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, like the people like stay in one place for like multiple frames at a time.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, okay, I can see you're on a budget, but come on, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then Castlevania is just so dynamic. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. All parts of it, too. I feel like with some animes, it's easy to get sloppy with the backgrounds. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's easy to just have like a background that's like a yellow gradient and some speed lines. And then, you know, here's the character and they're yelling and fight scenes are like,
especially during fight scenes, like the background is just like a washed color.
Right. Exactly. But I feel like they don't really do any of that with Castlevania. It's like full backgrounds and the settings are really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They pay a lot of mind to the architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Which I think for me at least, it's a big nod to the games because the games always had so much going on in the backgrounds. Like mm-hmm. you'd have like mm-hmm. a chandelier moving and there's to be some trees and stuff. Like there was easily like 3 to 4 levels of depth that was moving behind you.
Right.
You know, besides just your character and the monsters you're fighting.
Yeah.
And this mm-hmm. this anime does that. Like it gives you everything. There's no waste of detail whatsoever.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good way to put it.
Which it's funny you bring up Castlevania and we talk about Netflix because there's a show that's being developed right now that I'm super excited for that is a nod to my childhood, and that's He-Man, the Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
Really?
It's going to be animated the same way that Castlevania is animated. And that's why I'm excited.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's nice. It's you mean they're going to drop it? You mean they're going to drop a 1985, like, our mouths only move once per scene animation? Excuse me.
Yeah, well, because I knew about this show was going to be made for a while. I saw that Kevin Smith was going to helm the show. And my first mm-hmm. worry and fear was because I'm an 80s kid. I love 80s cartoons, and they've recreated She-Ra and they're redoing Thundercats. And both of those were done mm-hmm. in such a like kiddie and goofy way that it disappointed me.
Yeah.
Like Thundercats has turned into Steven Universe. I was like, that's not Thundercats. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And so when I heard He-Man is being created, it's like, this is probably going to suck too. I have no hope for this. And when I just this week, they announced what it was going to look like and everything. And who's on? They got Mark Hamill as Skeletor.
No shit.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I was like,
oh, he's
this
perfect.
Is going to be great.
Amazing. This is amazing.
Yeah. I was like, I need to hear nothing else. Skeletor, Mark Hamill, and Castlevania animations, I'm in. I need nothing else. Another cool thing,
honestly,
is Kevin Conroy is also on the show.
Oh,
really?
But wow.
When I heard that, I was like, please say he's He-Man.
I thought you were going to say, he's on the show, but not as Batman. That's what I thought you were going to say.
That would be really interesting to have him and Mark Hamill be the protagonist and the antagonist again, right?
Yep.
But I think Kevin Conroy is actually like one of the like henchmen dudes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can't remember who he's going to be.
Sides.
But yeah, when I saw those two names, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
All of my childhood right now.
Man, heavy hitters.
Yeah, there were some other names. I can't remember who they are right now, but it's shaping up to be something that I definitely want to see now.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Netflix, man. Every once in a while, they give you something that you want.
Yeah. In the midst of a lot of crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone, that's what we've been up to. You know, let us know what you're up to. What are you guys watching? What are you reading? Let us know on our social media. Maybe it's something that we should be watching too.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Give us ideas.
Recommend us some YouTubes.
Where could they actually follow us, guys?
They can follow us at Famous Monsters on Instagram and Twitter and facebook.com/FMOFL.
Another podcast, another night. As always, this is Famous Monsters signing off.
Bye.